This is us learning in public, trying to...
Literally learning in public.
Yeah.
We're at Vancouver Public Library. Yes. There are glass doors. Yes. We are literally learning in public.
Pulling back the curtain of silence.
And learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala.
This is Seen.
Brown-eyed activism.
Healing at the intersections.
Recently, I was wanting to try a new healing modality, so I went to see a new practitioner, like a new therapist than I usually see.
How could you? Betrayed.
We don't have to be monogamous to our practitioners.
I know. You know more than I, but I'm like, I can't cheat on Sherry. I love her.
I know. She's the best.
Yes.
But so before I saw this new therapist, I shared a little bit about what I was wanting to work with, and mm-hmm. It was pretty emotionally intense material. And then a couple sessions in, I was talking about the family culture I was raised in, which is very like stiff upper lip, like keep it together, don't express your emotions.
And
she was asking me how I thought it affected me or how it's still affecting me, and I admitted that I can find it pretty challenging to be vulnerable emotionally. And then she shared that she had noticed that I seemed to present as being just very like fine and okay, and knowing I'm a therapist too, she was like, isn't it interesting when we have clients who like we know they're coming in for a reason, but then when they're actually with us, they're just like, everything's fine, nothing's wrong.
Do you think you brought that energy in? Well, once
she says it, I'm like, that's kind of my MO. Like, I default to intellectually discussing the things going on for me, but it's more rare for me to be really like in my feelings about things, and especially to show rather than tell those feelings to the people around me. What about you? Do you relate to what I'm saying? Are you different?
I think it's inconsistent. Nolan would tell me he knows when I'm upset. He's like, you are an open book. Like, I know your face. You cannot hide, like, negative emotions particularly.
Right.
He's like, your eyes just look so sad, and I can tell that from you when you're upset. But I feel, and I will say as well, people will oftentimes, like, if I am, like, you know, coming into work and people ask you how you are, like, I'm okay. They're like, oh, what's wrong? Because I think my natural tendency used to be very like chipper and positive and upbeat. So people can read that off of me. But I, for the most part, I'm really good at just being consistent with the chipper, upbeat person and having a bit of, I don't know, duality with that. Like, to people who I'm really close to, I feel way more comfortable expressing the emotions, but I do intellectualize things. Like, I feel like I talk about feelings in an abstract way a lot of the time, almost like distancing myself from the proximity, because sometimes it's just like you don't want to go through the feelings when you're talking about them. You just want to state them objectively, quote unquote, like the distance. You know what I'm saying?
And I wonder if any of that is because it's hard to be emotionally vulnerable with people.
Of course. And I feel like I'm just beginning to scratch the surface about how to be more emotionally vulnerable in my intimate relationships, like with friends and my partner and even my mom, like, and my sisters and my family and stuff like that.
Yeah, because you were raised in a similar family kind of, I mean, different background, but like similar in that you weren't supposed to express all your feelings. You're supposed to keep it together.
I think it was more like my dad was more controlling when it came to expression of emotions, particularly negative emotions. My mom was pretty okay with us crying and that kind of thing. Like, she wasn't very... She didn't have expectations when it came to that, but I definitely felt like there wasn't that much room to express emotions because there were so many more, quote unquote, like pressing things to deal with. Right. And we all presented as, I will speak for my sisters, I think we all presented as just like capable, confident, we're all doing good. And so there was no really cause for concern. And when you don't, when you assume that there's no cause for concern, you're not really curious. I don't think my mom had the time or the capacity truly to be curious about scratching and being like scratching below the surface and asking those kinds of questions that are like, how are you really doing? Like, that kind of thing.
I think it's really hard when we do present as very capable and confident, right? Because people assume that everything's fine. And even if something isn't horribly wrong, there's always nuance, right? There's always complexity. We're never just good.
Absolutely. And I feel like anytime somebody presents to me as if everything is fine, my curiosity is always, you know, how comfortable, I wonder how comfortable that person feels telling me things, because I find myself, I'm a natural oversharer when I become comfortable with people. Mm-hmm. So I always find it really fascinating when people are able to have really, really strict or upright boundaries when it comes to expressing what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Interesting, because I wanted to talk about oversharing. So we're going to get to that in a second. But yeah, we just talked so much about connection being the key to a lot of our healing and our liberation. Mm. And I think it's important to hone in on emotional vulnerability, because we have to be vulnerable in order to experience a real connection. Because otherwise we might be in relationships and surrounded by people, but then we're still going to be lonely and we might not even realize why.
Ooh, I feel like that's definitely something that a lot of, I see this a lot on social media, posts like that, where people are saying, you know, it's the worst thing is feeling loneliness when you're in a room full of people who supposedly love you and you love them.
Yeah.
Because you're not, I feel like you're withholding some part of your identity out of fear or whatever. Like, you're scared to show people who you really are, you know?
Yeah. And that's the thing, I think. When we have these relationships, we're with people and we're feeling lonely, I think it's because something's getting in the way of the connection, and maybe that's our stuff. Like, mm-hmm. we have defenses or armor up and we're not really open mm-hmm. and like sharing from our core, or the people around us aren't.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think it's really important to explore what's going on with some of that. And I think specifically it's emotional vulnerability, because I think that our emotions are a lot more vulnerable than our thoughts and our stories, because we have quite a bit of control over our thoughts and our stories.
Hmm.
At least sometimes.
Like the stories we tell other people about ourselves?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah. And even our thoughts, sometimes we find ourselves thinking things without meaning to, but we can kind of catch that. We can work on that. But I think our feelings, we can control how we respond to our feelings.
Yeah, that's true.
But the feelings themselves, a lot of them are just deeper than what our conscious mind is in control of.
Totally.
So I think it's a lot more vulnerable to share that, right? Because it's something about ourselves that we might not even necessarily like or understand, or it might not be our preference. We might not want to feel this way, but this is how we feel.
Yeah, totally. I think it's even difficult for people to begin to identify what it is they're feeling. Sometimes I don't know if we have the best vocabulary for our feelings mm-hmm. or what we're like, our emotions. And so then after just being able to identify your emotions, feeling comfortable or safe enough to share it to who, like, sometimes you don't even have an audience who's willing to, you know, take part or be privy or care about how you're feeling.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I don't even think we can always necessarily identify our true feelings if we're not sharing them with other people. Because do you ever have where you're thinking or feeling one thing inside your head, and then as soon as you say it out loud, you realize it's something different? Or have you ever found yourself saying something to somebody and their reaction kind of surprises you, and you realize maybe there is something else underneath what
that
you were
missing or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, yeah.
So it's really hard. I think when we choose to be emotionally vulnerable, it's a big risk, because again, it's kind of this unknown. We're not necessarily even sure what we're sharing all the time if we choose to just let go and open up, and we're not sure what the other person's going to see or how they're going to respond to it. So
yeah,
it's scary. It's a
and
big risk.
Totally. And there's always that fear of judgment, right?
Yeah.
Even amongst the people that you love and that love you and that you and you're in community or relationships with, it can be, for me anyways, I always am kind of like, oh shit, like, if I say this, will it change everything?
Yeah.
Or, you know, for me, I always worry about, like, the weight or the significance or the impact of, like, expressing how I'm feeling or what I'm thinking about mm-hmm. or what I'm trying to process. That feels like a huge risk, because oftentimes the fear, I guess, is that somebody on the receiving end of whoever's listening to what you're saying will take that and misunderstand you. I think my biggest fear a lot of the times is being misunderstood.
Yeah.
And then as well, I always feel like I'm always thinking out loud. So sometimes I like to not express everything as I'm, you know, in real time, because I'm thinking to myself, well, no, I don't know if that's actually accurate or true,
right.
You know? And sometimes you, like, test the thing that you're feeling. You test it out by talking to other people. And if they respond to you in ways that don't affirm or align or echo, or you know what I mean, give some sort of weight to what you're feeling, it can make you shut down altogether.
Yes, totally. And so that's the biggest thing about vulnerability, is that it's a risk. You're risking being harmed.
Yeah.
And I think when you choose to be truly vulnerable, if you do experience rejection or judgment, it's so much more painful because you're showing the real you without all of those defenses by definition, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the biggest relational wound, maybe, mm-hmm. is if somebody rejects you when you have all your defenses down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, so a lot of people will manage that risk by not being vulnerable, by having our defenses up, by presenting as fine, by right. not sharing how we really feel. Mm-hmm. Another way that not being vulnerable can present, I think, sometimes is by oversharing. Mm. So when I used to start with new therapists, I would sit there and, like, in the first session, I'd want to say all the bad things that had happened to me. But I'd be not necessarily looking right at them. I'd sort of be like looking away, and I wouldn't really let them say very much. I'd kind of cut them off or just not let them in. Mm-hmm. Because it's so different to just say things out loud when other people are near you than it is to be actually tuned in to yourself, tuned into the other person, feeling how what you're saying is landing with them, feeling what it feels like to be saying this to this other person, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's a very different emotional experience mm-hmm. than just saying words out loud in a room that other people are in. If I were to share with you, you know, something I went through as a child, if I were to just sort of say that in a very kind of nonchalant way without, and then didn't really pause and let you
Take it in
and also respond to me, right? That's a much, I'm saying it out loud, but mm. it's not really risking letting you see how much that thing was painful for me. And it's not risking what you might say. Because I think with therapists, I'd had some bad experiences. And so I was scared maybe that I'd be victim blamed or something like that. Mm. So I didn't really let them say anything.
Yes.
And it wasn't necessarily happening on a conscious level. But I didn't realize until a lot later that that was why I was so lonely, was because I wasn't really connecting with people on the level that I wanted to. And I thought that I was, because I was saying all these really personal things to people, but I wasn't really saying it in a way that was connected.
Mm, the fear of somebody else further victimizing you in situations, mm-hmm. specifically when it comes to, like, harm that you've experienced, is real. And also there's this fear that, like, somebody won't give you what you need in response.
Yeah.
And you can't really control that. That's the scariest part. I mean, with therapy, your expectation is specific because you're paying somebody for their services.
Yeah.
So it's really fucked up. Like, you never know, because fuck, like, even a fucking therapist can say fucked up shit back to you.
Totally. Then, I mean, it happens in all of our relationships too. Like, I'm sure you've experienced trying to talk about, or you've had so many experiences of white people not understanding experiences of racism. So if race comes up and you're around white people, I'm sure sometimes maybe you have to say something, but you're probably going to say it without really opening up for them to engage with you about it, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, absolutely. 100%.
Yeah.
You make it like a one-way street.
Yeah. And it's that same thing, right? Of, like, maybe not looking directly at them as you're talking. Maybe not, like, maybe you can tell they kind of are opening their mouth to say something, and you just keep talking, don't let them in.
You steamroll.
Right?
I know that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think with things like that, you know, trying to speak out when you have had a bunch of negative experiences, specifically with, like, talking to white folks about something that they might have said or done that could be racist, or that is racist, or has racist undertones, or whatever have you. I think that really resonates with me, because I've definitely been there. And one of the reasons why I just don't allow them a word in edgewise is basically because I don't have any reason to believe that they will say anything that's new or, yeah. or like, helpful. So I'm like, you really need to hear this. Let me just go out on this limb for you and tell you all these things before you even get that word out, you know?
Yeah. And yeah. So that's a time where I think it's really wise for us to not be too emotionally vulnerable, because it's too big of a risk to take, and it's probably not worth the risk. Like, we're not going to get anything from this interaction that's actually worth the much greater risk of being harmed by the interaction.
Yes.
So that's a great calculation. But then it carries over again into other times, because it's not just in these sort of systemic situations. There's other times too where what we're feeling is maybe something that is uncomfortable to feel. Maybe we're feeling a lot of shame. We're feeling a lot of grief. Maybe we're feeling anger we don't think we should.
Mm.
Or maybe we're feeling relief about something that we feel guilty that we feel that relief about,
right?
That thing or whatever it might be. And so there's these things about ourselves that maybe we're worried other people won't think it's okay. We probably on some level don't think it's okay.
Yeah.
And so we find ourselves keeping those defenses up and either editing it, not even saying it at all, or making it funny, maybe.
Oh my God, that's me. That's so funny. That's so me.
Right.
I feel seen. No, it totally on brand. I feel as though I always use humor to almost deflect.
Yeah.
As a deflection. It's actually funny because after our Vancouver podcast episode we did live, your sister came up to me and she was like, when you were talking about laughing things off, and then I was like, shout out to Sinead, and Sinead was like, yeah. And afterwards we had a conversation and she was like, that is it. That is all. Just laughing at things, even though you know, like the level of laughing and the level of like joviality and making things like funny, mm-hmm. it's the same degree to which you are feeling deep feelings. But like you only express one facet of the feelings positively as opposed to all the other things you're actually feeling.
Right.
You know? And that can be, for me, it's been really exhausting.
Yeah, it can be really exhausting. And again, it can lead to us being really lonely, because a lot of people, they're just going to take that at face value and think, yeah. Oh, you got this. Like, this isn't really bothering you. You're fine. And whether it's humor or whether it's intellectualizing, we might think we're being vulnerable because we're communicating our feelings. But then I kind of wanted to dig into the difference between communicating our feelings and being in our feelings with other people.
Yes.
And
ooh, those are different things.
Totally different things. Yeah. So I started thinking about this because, and I feel very vulnerable sharing this story.
Yeah.
I don't judge me, but do you listen to FKA Twigs?
No, but I've seen like live performances. And
okay.
She's incredible.
Yeah, she is. She is incredible. So she has this song called Good to Love. Amazing song. I love it so much. But there's a line in it that I found really hard to listen to. And I thought that this would be a universal experience. And then I shared this with a couple people and they were like, oh.
You got problems.
Yeah, exactly. The line is, she says, will you hold me while I cry? And I'm just like, oh, God.
You got all cringy and
somebody
shit.
Saying that, it's just made me so uncomfortable because
uncomfortable.
I'm so, stop.
Sorry, continue. Uncomfortable, yeah. Sorry, I really took you off your trajectory there.
I feel doubly vulnerable right now.
No, but that, so like the idea of you crying and somebody being there to like witness and hold you makes you feel
and,
like all
and
fucked
saying,
up?
And saying that to somebody.
Mm.
That is a level of vulnerability to me that it's like expert level vulnerability, but I was like, I'm not there. And I totally, like I shared this with Sinead and I totally expected her to be like, I know, I hate that. And she was like,
You even look like her when you say that shit. I mean, okay, but to be honest, I mean, I think it's fair to find that line to be, because no, it's not like you're just thinking it in your head. You're asking it as a request.
It's like the most vulnerable thing. I mean, I don't know. This is an opinion. This is a point of view. But for me, it just feels like the most vulnerable thing of all time to be crying in your feelings and then fully like opening yourself up and asking for this kind of care and like intimacy and closeness. That's like, that's scary. That's hard. That's,
but what
like,
is somebody that loves you going to say? They're going to say no?
No, but
you think you're going to, I'm going to hold you while you cry? She's laughing. She can't even handle
can.
This shit. But
I can't. It makes me so uncomfortable.
Oh, Lala. What? Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you.
this is another example of you just being like, yeah, that's weird. You should probably go to more therapy.
I'm sorry. I'm not even trying to be judgmental. I'm thinking about all of the times that I have definitely cried in front of my mom, in front of my, like, on the phone with my mom, in front of my partner.
I cry in front of people.
You do, but
I just don't.
If somebody were to extend, like, you know, physical touch towards you,
that would be okay too. I think what's really hard for me is asking for it. And I think
in the moment of, like, crying.
Yeah, and I think what that is admitting the need for it.
Yeah.
Because I think that's some of my stuff, is that because of, you know, we won't go into, like, all the details of my childhood trauma, but I have, I guess, a feeling of other people won't necessarily be there to meet your emotional need, so it's less painful to just not communicate them, to, like, take care of them yourself, maybe hope that someone will just, like, magically meet them without you telling them. But it's...
Hypothetically speaking, how much better would you feel if you were crying and somebody was, like, just automatically came in, like, engulfed you in a hug? Like, if it was me, I'm not saying, like, random people. I'm saying, like, people who you know and love.
Okay, that's a great example. Yeah, because then I didn't have to be vulnerable enough to admit that I needed that.
Gotcha.
Do you have any things, this is kind of putting you on the spot, but do you have any things you can think of that would be, they just feel so vulnerable to you or scary or maybe something you already overcame?
Just, like, reaching out to friends and being like, I'm really struggling with this thing.
Mm.
That's been something that has been difficult for me. But then I have, like, so many amazing friends who, when I ask them, how are you doing, they just tell me how they're really doing. Mm. So I think from having them tell me after me asking them, like, you know, I'm really invested in our relationship. I want to know how you are. It's just lended to me being able to practice that as well in return and being more open and honest with my friends. And then I've realized the people that I can't do that with, oftentimes they're not the ones who are reciprocating. I think it's got to be a balance. It's got to be some sort of equal inputs from both sides. Otherwise, it goes back to the almost oversharing piece where you are adding more to the pot of emotions than somebody else's, and then you end up judging yourself. You know, you're thinking, did I overshare? Did I say too much? Was I too emotional? Was I sharing too much of myself? Like, nobody else was going there like I was. Maybe I should just, you know,
totally
not go there again.
I think that everything we do, we're always cultivating space in relationships, for better or for worse. Mm. And so I think when we're being vulnerable and opening up, I think we're cultivating a space where that's more the norm, or where that's okay, or where that's encouraged, or that is seen as, something that we're able to do, that we're allowed to do.
Yes.
But on the other side of that, I've seen sometimes people who want other people, genuinely really want other people to be vulnerable with them, but they aren't willing or able to be vulnerable. And it can be hard sometimes for people to see why they're lacking the connection that they want in their lives.
You know, what's funny is I have a friend of mine who is... she's a really good holder of space. She doesn't like crying herself. She doesn't really deal really well with, like, people's big outbursts of emotions. She's expressed to me, you know, if somebody is just, like, blubbering and, like, really upset and that kind of crying, like, those kinds of emotions, I don't really know what to do. But my response is always, what do you want me to do? How can I best? She wants to be a purposeful person in that moment, because she realizes that for her, her strength isn't, physical touch and holding somebody. It might be, if that's what you need. If you tell her, hey, I need you to, you know, can you hold me? That's what she'll do. She just wants you to tell her what she can do to make this problem not better, but just how can she help you? But she is very much the kind of person who, the vulnerability, she creates a space for you to be vulnerable, and she will be there to hold you in those moments if you need that from her. But that's not her natural tendency, is to be, you know, touchy-feely, wanting to cry, that kind of thing.
Right.
You know, there's that interesting ability to meet the needs of others, even though she doesn't have the same needs at all.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know how she experiences that from the inside.
Yeah. And that's my biggest question always. I'm like, dude, you tell me you don't cry? Like, how does that, do you, like, how often do you, because I cry so much.
Yeah.
How often do you cry?
I mean, depends on the time period, but pretty often,
like at least once a week.
I mean, it depends, like, right
now. It truly depends on the time.
Yeah,
period,
like,
yes.
Right now more, like, 6 months ago less.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm a weekly crier.
Yeah.
Like, for sure. I'll go on Instagram and look at shit and be like, Like, things just touched my heart.
Okay, so since you bring up Instagram, I also was wanting to talk a little bit about social media. It's funny because I was thinking after we had our whole episode on social media and I was talking about how much I love it.
Yes.
And I was thinking after about how if you just follow me on social media, you might not realize that because I'm not actually that active.
Yes.
I was thinking about it because also, so some of my favorite people on social media, like our friend Jane is one of my favorite people on social media because the way that she shares... She does it. She shares in a personal way without oversharing and also seems to very effortlessly weave in the political, the systemic, all
Absolutely.
Of those things. So I feel so enriched by her. And those are always my favorite people on social media. That's why I love social media, is people like that. And another friend of mine who is like that on social media, she recently posted something saying, sometimes her family, because she'll talk a lot about like her depression and where she is with it on a given day, and she was trying to work as a freelance writer and she ended up getting a job in retail again because she wasn't able to like make her bills, so very vulnerable. And she was saying that her family doesn't always understand why she shares so much on social media, and she feels like part of the reason why so many people find social media so unbearable is because people are only sharing the highlights. Ooh. And so she tries to be more real so that other people know that that's, you know, that other people are going through that. And it just makes me think a lot. And so I've been wondering, like, do I want to share more on social media and what might that look like? Because I think it's a hard balance. Like, how much do you want to share and how vulnerable do you want to be in that kind of forum?
And I think it's also, you're totally right about how Jane strikes this beautiful balance between sharing the personal narrative, the way that it ties into the political, the social, like all these other things that are bigger than just Jane.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like a really beautiful skill to have. I don't think everybody has that.
Yeah.
And I also sometimes I guess I wonder, and I've been definitely guilty of, when I see people sharing things on social media sometimes, you know, and you'd be like, oh, I wonder why they're sharing that. Like, you start to get suspect or suspicious of intent.
Mm.
And I don't necessarily think it's helpful to be this is me admonishing myself. I don't necessarily think it's helpful to be, you know, like, why did this person post this thing or whatever? It's like, they posted whatever they posted because they felt like it was, you know, it's their space. They can do whatever they want to with it. And I think it would be so cool to be surrounded by more folks online, virtually through social media, that felt free to share, like free enough to share how things were actually going with themselves,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the highlight reel, because then it becomes... The highlight reel becomes so, it's exciting to watch and you just want to say, like, you know, you're doing amazing, great, awesome, but kind of goes back to what we were talking about before. You assume that the person's okay, even though they're not okay.
Totally.
And then you don't have the ability to actually have deeper connection with that person.
Totally.
Because you don't even think that it's worth it to check in and say, like, hey, how are things?
Totally. Really? Yeah. And then I think about maybe the same kind of considerations. Like, I think there is the equivalent of oversharing on social media, where people are maybe sharing in a way that isn't grounded in actually sitting with how does it feel to share this, and is it safe, you know, because sometimes we're really wanting something back that maybe we can't get from social media, but we're not actually being present with that reality. Whereas the people who I feel so enriched by, it feels to me, and it would be interesting to have maybe a conversation with them about their experience to see if it feels the same from the inside, but it feels more like just sharing in the way that they do feels good to them.
Yes.
And they're not necessarily looking for a specific response back, unless it's something they know they're gonna get. Like, I know if I post something, you're gonna comment
like,
on it, right?
Yeah,
but totally. It's not like putting it out into the ether and like not knowing if there's anybody who follows me who might be able to hold that space
for you.
Yeah,
I think that is interesting that you said that, because I definitely, there have been times where I have posted something and I haven't been very clear in my own mind about what my expectations are, mm-hmm. or what I'm trying to get out of the, you know, posting something or sharing something. And in many ways, I would say, don't overthink it. If you want to put something out there, put something out there. You know, thing number one. But on the other hand, I think, and this ties back into maybe a conversation we had during the social media episode, I'm going to assume we did, but tying your sense of self-worth and, you know, personal satisfaction or sense of self to how other people see you.
Yeah.
You know, and so I guess I always get wary of when I am skirting into the danger zone, so to speak, of putting my shit out there and doing so with the intent of having other people simply validate me. Yeah. I think the more healthy thing for myself is not to do something so that other people validate me, but so that other people can connect with me and we can share in this experience yes. together, or share, you know, I don't know, experiences or things we've learned because it's something that they've experienced as well. Like something like that. It's like a step further to validation.
Yeah, totally. And I do want to be really clear that I'm not trying to judge anybody for sharing in any particular way.
No, not at all. Yeah.
Because I think we're all ultimately looking for a connection.
Yes.
And I think we do the best that we can to try to find it. And often we're not able to find it in the ways that we need, or at least, you know, at every moment. And that's human, right? Yeah. Nobody has it all figured out. So we're all just trying to find connection in the best way that we can at any given moment. But I think that's maybe why it's important to think about and for us to talk about, how do we make this calculation? Like, how do we decide when to be vulnerable? If being vulnerable is inherently a risk, risking being hurt, but is also a necessary ingredient to getting connection, how do we decide when and where and with whom and all of those things?
Yeah. As you're talking about that, I don't know the answer, but how we decide. But
answer.
Shit. How, girl? How you don't know? No, I think when you're talking about that, it reminds me of, I saw something earlier this year on Instagram, and then I posted something that was like, I'm trying to make more friends. And I like even, and I was like, I just want more friends, like, holla at me if you, like, want to go for a coffee or get a drink or something like that. And I had never, I don't think I'd ever posted anything like that, but I had seen somebody, somebody inspired me. I don't remember who it was. My mind is deceived. I don't remember who it was, but I, like, in reading their post, it really encouraged me to go there and make a specific direct request to the ether or my community that follows me on Instagram. Because I knew that I was in this space where I'm like, hey, I actually do need, I have needs and I want to address them and I want people to know what they are. And then lo and behold, like people were like, hey, I would love to go for coffee with you. I would love to do this with you. I would love to talk to you about this thing. What are you doing? Like, you know, then I was able to, but it was a huge risk. And I think the thing that I find important in just sharing that with you is all it takes is one person to begin that sort of public display of vulnerability to inspire another person to do it.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it was just that one post that somebody else said, you know, Instagram is full of people who are putting their highlight reel out there, but like, I've been going through it. I would love more connection specifically with these kinds of people. If you have friends in mind or if that's you, let me know. And I was like, damn it, that is the way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't know if that's like a how. That's just, that was just one way that I ended up.
A time that you took that risk and it really paid off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm thinking a big part, it's kind of, as always, a big part of how we're going to decide when the right time is to be vulnerable is to check into our bodies and see how it feels. And not try to steamroll, because I think sometimes our conscious mind tells us, oh, I should just say these things, or I should just share in this way, or I should. And there's parts of us that don't actually feel ready. And we try to just ignore the resistance.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like, don't ignore when your gut is telling you, like, maybe not right now.
Yeah, I think that what we can do instead is to start with where we are. So sometimes, like with Mel, for example, and that's my closest person, but there's still times where I need to talk about something or I want to say something and I am afraid to do it. And I'll often start by saying, there's something I want to talk about and I feel afraid to do it.
Yeah.
It's like, you can start with where you are. If you feel the resistance, you can talk about that, or at least just like be with that and notice that and not try to be somewhere else.
Yeah. Or push it away.
Yeah.
Run away from it.
Yeah, because sometimes, I mean, often it's very wise. So often it's telling us we actually haven't built the safety in the relationship yet that we can trust that it's safe to share this thing or share in this way.
Ooh. Is that, I mean, that's part of the case. Could it also be that we don't feel like it's something that we have internalized ourselves about?
Totally.
Or a shame we might have, or something that has more to do with us and not necessarily the other person.
Totally. Yeah, that's another one. I think it can be like that. And that's why I think it's important to spend time with the feeling and not push it away, because we need to be able to parse out, is this because the relationship isn't ready yet? Or is it because I'm bringing something to it? Mm-hmm. And if it's because of my own stuff, I think that's the key time to be saying things like, I'm wanting to share about something and I'm feeling really scared to do it.
That's such an that's a really great way to start, though.
Yeah.
That's such a great way to start, because that instantly connects you to how you're feeling in the moment. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all. And like, you can, what you do from there is up to you, but just to say, I want to talk about something, but I'm uncomfortable or it makes me feel a type of way.
Yeah.
The person might say, okay, well, you tell me when you're ready. And then it's like, well, cool. Okay. Like, that person's given me that much more, you know, room or space to come back when I'm ready or feeling, you know, confident in expressing that.
Totally. Because ultimately, I think it just ends up being balancing of risk and safety. So we have to think about how much we're risking, and is it something that we're able, are we risking more than we're able to lose, essentially?
Right.
So if I just bare my entire soul and this person doesn't respond in a way that feels good, is that going to devastate me?
Yeah. Ooh.
Right?
Yes. Yeah.
Because sometimes that might be a time to pull back a little bit. Or like with a social media post, that can be another time where it's like, if I post this, and
I don't get the responses that I want. Yeah.
Is that fine? Am I just going to move on? Or is that actually going to really, really hurt me? And if it is, then maybe that's not the time to share. Or maybe share a little bit less.
Or share with specific people only.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. I think it's a really good gauge.
So that's kind of like our primer, maybe, on emotional vulnerability. Maybe we'll do another episode on it. Yeah. We'll just like cry the whole time and like.
And I can hold you. You can ask me to hold you and then I will not. Just kidding. I will.
What?
I would never do you like that. Just leave you hanging in the small little booth. Are you kidding me? I'll just like turn around in the corner.
It would be actually much harder for you not to hold me in this
I know.
Booth.
Just like fall and I'll hold you. That's how that would work.
Yeah. Okay. And then I just want to finish up by talking about our Woman of Color of the Week. I want to feature Mia Mingus. Do you follow her on social media?
No. Who is this person?
Okay. So from her bio, Mia Mingus is a writer, educator, and community organizer for disability justice and transformative justice. She's a queer, physically disabled, Korean, transracial, and transnational adoptee raised in the Caribbean. She works for community, interdependency, and home for all of us, not just some of us, and longs for a world where disabled children can live free of violence with dignity and love. As her work for liberation evolves and deepens, her roots remain firmly planted in ending sexual violence. Is that not the best bio of all
time? Yeah, that's amazing. I was like, did you just make that up? Or wow. Like,
no, I need to work on my bio.
Gotcha.
I have something aspirational now. So she's done so much incredible work, and I wanted to specifically feature her in this episode because of the work that she's done around the idea of ugliness and the need for us to move away from beauty and desirability and towards something that she calls magnificence, which I think is the shift that we need to make if we want to take the risk to be truly vulnerable. So she says, quote, ugliness is a path to intimacy. You can't have intimacy without trust, and you can't have trust without vulnerability. In order to be vulnerable, you have to reveal parts of yourself that are dismissed as capital U ugly. And I think it's so important, right? Because it's really the parts of us that we hate the most that we need the most connection around. Like we've talked about.
Oh my God, it's so true.
Yeah. The things that we're ashamed of, it's like we need connection and we need for those things to be seen most of all. And I know for me, it's always been the things that I'm most ashamed of and disgusted by that have been the hardest to share and also the most important in building the relationships where I actually feel seen and understood and loved.
Mm-hmm.
And Mia's work on this is very much grounded in disability justice, and she talks a lot about the connection between how we all contort ourselves to reach for beauty and how we all contort ourselves to try to fit the capitalist able-bodied ideal. and how those of us who are disabled also are less able to fool ourselves and are more often forced to confront the fact that, in her words, sometimes shit is not beautiful and that's okay. And it's actually more generative. There's a depth to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I just want to share this quote that where she talks about magnificence and magnificence as a way to understand that depth that happens when things aren't okay. So she says, magnificence has always been with us. Always been there in the freak shows, staring back at the gawking crowd, in the back rooms of the brothels, in the fields fresh with cotton, on the street corners in the middle of the night as the bombs drop, in our breaths after surviving the doctor's office, crossing the border in the first quiet moments of a bloody face after the attack is done. Magnificence was there.
Damn.
Right?
Yeah.
It just... you feel it, right? Yeah. On a visceral level, what she's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm only just scratching the surface on this, so please read her essay, Moving Toward the Ugly, A Politic Beyond Desirability, which is up on her website. And also read her interview with Alok Ved Menon, Why Ugliness is Vital in the Age of Social Media.
Ooh, that's like two heavy hitters.
Right?
Yeah.
They're so good. Yeah. So thank you so much for your work, Mia.